is small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis.
And I'm Kyle Dodson.
And joining us tonight is a familiar voice, a familiar face. If you listen to podcasts, if you listen to Never Not Funny or any number of podcasts, we have Mr. Dave Holmes here.
Hello. How are you guys?
We're good, Dave.
I'm so happy to be here.
This is exciting because, Dave, you have a book out right now.
I do.
Or it's upcoming out. It'll drop
in a matter of days.
It'll drop the Tuesday after this airs.
Oh, boy.
So if you're listening right now.
So the 28th of June.
Yes. Thank you, Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Tuesday, June 28th.
You could pre-order it right now. It'd be
stores everywhere.
Right at your your doorstep.
That'd be great. Amazon and Barnes & Noble bring that shit right to you. They'll drone it. I don't know if they'll drone it yet.
Do you have Amazon Prime?
I do have Amazon Prime. I like it.
Will this be on Kindle?
Yeah, it will. It will also be on audiobook. I read the book cover to cover just last week.
What was that like?
It was excruciating because, I mean, I'm happy with it. I'm very, very happy with it, but I sort of put it aside for a while. Mm-hmm. I turned in and then it's, you know, and then there's edits and there's copy edits and all that. So you got to read it a million times and then it just goes away to a plant, you know, to be bound and whatever. And you can't look at it anymore. And I didn't want to look at it anymore because I was, you know, I mean, you labor over a thing for a long time and it's like, it takes up a lot of your space. And so then I got it back and I'm very happy with it. But like in each chapter, there was one thing where I was like, yep, I got a better joke for there, but I just didn't, you know, it took me giving it away
now,
to have it.
You know. Have you listened to your audiobook yet? Have you done that yet?
No, I won't. I won't. That's too much. That's too much of me.
When you're reading your audiobook, how many mistakes? Are you a good cold reader?
I'm okay, cold reader.
I'm a horrible reader to read out loud.
Oh, really?
I'm just not good.
Yeah, no, that is one thing that I'm able to do. Okay. So I didn't, and also if I mess something up, it's I did it in GarageBand in my own office.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because it used to be Ben's studio in my office. My boyfriend is a composer and now
Ben
he's
Wise.
Taken over. Yes, he has colonized our guest house and now that is his studio.
I thought you were going to say just the rest of the house he's taken over.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's also true. Actually, our dog has, but we, my place used to, what is now my office used to be his studio. And so it's all soundproof.
Gotcha.
And I will occasionally do my Sirius show from the office. So I've just kept all the soundproofing up and we have great mics and all that. So I was just able to save the travel time.
So like the publisher doesn't like hire a studio time for you and you go record it. You just do it on your own?
Most of the time they do, but because I do so much recording in my studio, it was like, here's some of my stuff from Sirius. Listen to it. If it's up to your specs, then I'll just do it from home because you know, it takes forever to get anywhere here. And like things are a little bit busy right now. And I didn't want to like, you know, it would have been, I also didn't want to do it for like three solid days.
I would
just die. That's just too much of my own voice.
So how long did it take you to do it on your own time?
Probably what would end up being three full days, but over the course of a couple of weeks.
Okay, cool.
Just when I had an hour or two here or there, I would just go in and then invariably I would like get the mic set up and I'd take the collar off my dog so it wouldn't be jingling around.
Right, right.
And like Ben would be off in his studio doing his thing and I would start and like the helicopter looking for the fugitive would descend into our neighborhood or the leaf blowers would start or whatever. Right. It was like, I guess we're under a whole lot of flight pads that I didn't know anything about, but there were a lot of distractions.
Well, my friend calls that the sweet sound of progress.
Yeah. Okay.
Whenever that's happening.
I'll buy that.
Now, this is a really, really great book to read. It's really funny.
Thank you.
Your voice really comes through.
Thanks.
And I was like cracking up a ton. I mean, you don't laugh out loud when you read a book, but I was really like getting a kick out of your stories.
All I want from you is like a, That's all I need from it.
Oh, you definitely got a couple of those.
I have a couple of those.
And I have highlighted parts in here that made me do that.
Okay,
and,
good.
Actually, when you walked to the car, I read one to Kyle.
Oh, good.
Because it cracks me up so much.
Thanks.
Now, we were supposed to record this on Sunday.
Yes.
This past Sunday.
That's correct.
Which would have been I can't get my dates right.
I think it was the 12th.
The 12th. And and you, of course, texted me and said, it would not be a good day for you to be here.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a good day for anyone
to be anywhere,
to be doing anything.
Yeah.
And this is because of the, you know, the mass shooting that happened in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
And not to turn it around to me, but this came to play at my house because my daughter, Sarah, who's she's going to be 16, her and her two friends, her and two of her friends, they slept over at our house and they were going to go to LA Pride on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've been planning this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then, you know, I get up, my wife and my other daughter were out of town. They're, they're out of the country. Mm-hmm. So dad wakes up, I get a shower, I turn on TV and I was like, oh boy. Okay. Yeah. So then I'm like, so I called her into the room and, they had already known about it. And I said, what do you think? What do you want to do? I mean, I personally, I didn't want them to go. I was nervous.
Yeah.
You know, and I told her, I go, I'll be okay. If I just said you can't go, I would be fine with you being mad at me for today or for a week. I can live with that. I said, but I couldn't live with it if I let you go and something happened, you know, God forbid. So her and her friend, I let them talk about it and they decided that they really did want to go.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, just make sure, you know, the other two girls call their parents and that they know we're going.
Right.
So, we get in the car and we drive there and I'm just about to exit Wilshire.
Yeah.
And one of the moms calls on my cell phone and says, no way. I can't. I've been thinking about it. I can't let it happen.
Right.
And that was right after they had discovered a guy trying to.
Well, that's the real problem.
So
how relieved were you?
I was
to have like a second.
Let me tell you something.
A second parental opinion.
I was like the king of the dads because first of all, I let them make their decision, even though in my head I'm like, oh man.
Yeah.
And so I was the cool dad because I let them and I was going to take them, but I was very relieved when they couldn't go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I absolutely understand.
But I hate that because it's always that thing. Oh, but then the terrorists have won. And right. I hate that too. So.
But it's your kids. It's your kids.
And I wasn't going to be with her.
No.
I was coming here to record.
Right.
So.
And even if you had, what
I can't do anything.
What are you going to do if somebody has a bomb or whatever? Luckily, nothing like that happened.
Yes.
When we found out about, you know, the guy with the car full of explosives and guns, scary. that was unbelievably, you know, I mean, it was terrifying, but it was also, I do think I've crossed over into a period of numbness about that kind of thing.
Like, which is like bad,
today,
which
by
is
the way,
sad.
It took me 12 hours to be like, what, an alligator ate a kid? Like I read that 50 times today and I was like, huh, how about that? Yeah. And then it took me all for that to cut through the fog of all the other horror in my brain. At a Disney resort, an alligator ate a kid.
We were talking about that before you got here. That family will never be able to even see the Disney logo.
No.
I mean, it's just. And that's an accident. There was nothing
that could have been done.
No. And when they were like last night, when they were like, we're searching for the kid. I'm just like searching. He's not alive. You know? And they're like, we're holding out hope. I'm like, guys, really?
But I mean, but you have to find.
I know.
The kid. But they found the kid, didn't they?
Yeah. And they said that he wasn't like.
They think the alligator dragged him under, drowned it. And then just went on.
Didn't eat the kid, which I mean, I don't know. There's no good scenario.
No, there's really
the
none
kid
of it's good.
Unless the kid is a superhero and beats up the
none of it's
but
good.
I can't even imagine the dad. You see it, you go, and then it's just like you must have been the shock that you must.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, crazy.
It takes me, if somebody like cuts me off or whatever, it takes me so long to find my horn. You know what I mean? Like I get so flustered, like in anything remotely resembling an emergency. I'm like, wait, where is it? Oh, it's in the center of my, you know, I mean, it's the bullseye that's right in front of me, but it takes me forever to like get it together enough to hit the thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, if like, I would like to think that I would react differently if it were, I mean, I don't have kids, but like, even if it were my dog,
like dog,
if another dog is sort of too aggressive to mine, then like I act sort of quickly, but I mean, an alligator?
Nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do.
It's not a coyote. It's not a dog. It's a killing machine.
It's a killing machine. So, yeah, it's pure muscle and teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
Teeth. I couldn't decide whether saying teeth or tooth. So I said
teeth. What did you, now you write for Esquire.
I do.
Online or
online and the magazine
and the magazine.
Uh-huh.
I'm not belittling your accomplishments.
No, online is where it's at right now. But it's also nice to get in print every now and then. Can we be honest?
I'm holding it right here.
There we go.
If this was only Kindle, you'd be disappointed.
It, It would be a little bit of a disappointment.
To hold it physically, to open up a box of books, you're
open
like,
it up and smell it.
Look what I did.
What a thing.
So what did you have to do on, did you have to report on Sunday?
I did. Yeah. And I, you know, I woke up and really every day, like there's a chat room mm-hmm. that's all the people, cause you know, most are in the office, but some are kind of scattered. And it's, you know, I just like, that's kind of how I catch up with the news of the day. And then generally if there's something to be written about it, somebody will, you know, will claim it or whatever. I'm a little bit on the gay beat, mm-hmm. you know, at Esquire. So I kind of felt as though I needed to write something.
Yeah.
And the bummer is that in times like that, it's actually very easy. Like that's, what you're feeling is a very like clean and obvious thing. Like,
yeah, you know, because it's right there.
It's right there. And it's, you know, and it, you know, my lived experience kind of, you know, I gives me a perspective on it. And so I just sort of wrote something quickly. And then I wanted to go, I of course wanted to go to the parade, but I also wanted to go and get some pictures and do some reporting from there. But it was, to be honest with you, I mean, it was a parade and it was so, things had happened so quickly that it was like, people didn't quite know how to respond. There were a few, you know, Yo Soy Orlando signs or whatever. But you know, not too many people really directly addressed it. Yeah. It really wasn't until the next day we went out on the
east
side.
So you went to LA Pride on Sunday?
I did, yeah.
And were people having fun? I mean, it's...
Oh, wait, it was Sunday when it happened, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was later when we got to east side. Yeah, no, people were having fun, you know? Okay. Yeah, of course. But I guess it was a little more somber. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, parades are weird things.
Yeah.
But over on the east side, they were at Akbar. They were taking up a collection, and the owner went. They open up the on like warm Sunday afternoons. They will they'll open up their parking lot and make it like an outside inside outside bar. And the owner came out and like read a speech and really like people got emotional. It was you know, it's easy to. It's horrifying. Like I said, you do get numb.
Yeah.
It's easy to sort of, you know, to just sort of get angry. And then you show up at a parade and you hear some disco and you kind of forget about it for a minute. But I'm glad that we showed up somewhere and somebody kind of like brought us back to reality. It's the thing about it is, especially now that we know that this guy might have been a gay guy himself, but just kind of intensely fucked up by religion and mental illness and whatever. It's, you know, this is a thing that like, that is frightening. Like this is, it's people like that can get their hands on guns that can just mow an entire room full of people down in seconds. And
that's also a reason why it's gotten way better, but it's still not to the point to where this guy was able to feel, hey, lots of people are gay. Lots of people are straight.
Right.
This is fine.
Right.
It's still not there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're not there yet. And to be honest with you, it happened in what was already my gayest summer ever. You know what I mean? Like I'm going through a kind of a second adolescence right now.
Okay.
And a lot of men my age are, and I think it's a thing that's not uncommon.
Okay.
Because most of us don't have kids.
Right.
We're at the age now where like a lot of our straight friends are starting to have kids or settle down or you know, move back to where they came from or whatever. And it's like, I have found, and I think also all of my fucked up hangups about being gay, that the book details excruciatingly, like I'm pretty much past now, and long overdue, but like I'm at a stage now where I'm much more comfortable with myself. And that is also a thing that a lot of guys my age are feeling. So we're spending a lot of time together and we're going out and like carousing and like, we're, you know what I mean? And we're writing things about our own experience where like 10, 15 years ago, we would have hinted at it or we would have been like, let's not be too gay with this thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Now it's like, no, let's fucking tell our story. Let's be, you know, let's be as gay as we can. You know what I mean? Like, let's address our own experience as directly as possible.
Straight people that don't feel comfortable telling their story.
Right.
So everyone should be
absolutely
this free.
Everyone should have their gayest summer ever. Here's in their own way.
Here's my thing with this. I cannot get this thing out of my head when I found out that you were gay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you were gay, and who cares?
Right.
But like the first thing when they go, oh yeah, that's Dave and his boyfriend. And I was like, oh, I didn't know Dave was gay. Mm-hmm. But why do I even have to think that?
Right.
Why do I even have to think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wanted to get past all this to where it's, and it wasn't a thing,
right?
But it was, but I did, and I might have said it out loud. I might have said it out loud. I didn't know, but you don't say, oh, I didn't know Pat was straight. I mean, it's
no, because that's the default thing.
I know, but it's,
I don't take that personally. It's as though it were like, oh, you didn't know Dave was Canadian or whatever. Okay. Just something where it's like, it's not that
I didn't know Dave owned a dog.
Different or yeah, stuff like that. Like that's fine. Oh, okay.
It feels
mildly
different,
surprising
though.
Fans. The thing that bothers me though, is that like 10 years ago, I would have been like, awesome. Like, you know, I thought that there was some value in passing as straight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or in like somebody being mildly surprised to know.
Yeah.
Or not just totally presenting that way. Mm-hmm. Like that made me better or something.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I ever thought that out loud, but like that for sure was the subtext of a lot of my,
well,
my,
you know, I grew up
shitty
in,
thinking.
I grew up in small town Pennsylvania. So I think, and my mother's, my Uncle Richard, he was gay and him and his guys were very flamboyant.
Sure.
Like they wanted you to know that they were gay. Like they all carried purses and it was like,
yeah,
it was like crazy over the top.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, and, you know, okay, good for them. They didn't care, you know, and they shouldn't.
Yeah.
But
now I respect the shit out of that. Where I think before I was terrified of that.
Right.
You know, now I think it's like, it takes such strength, especially along, you know, like in years past, like in the last few years, it's, you know, we're in a post Glee world. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of cool now.
And you live in pretty much one of the couple of spots in the country where everything's fine.
Yeah, we're exactly.
Close to fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, a bunch of us who are now teenagers again, went out to Palm Springs, for Memorial Day weekend and just straight up like did the strip and just like sat down and talked to people, like found like guys in their 70s and we're just like, let's have a drink and talk, you know?
Now the difference was that you got tired quick. You still got tired because you're older.
Strangely enough, no. And that's the thing.
You got in the mind, you got in the mindset.
The hangovers are much worse. I will tell you that.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's, I've got a weird second wind and it's like, and I'm glad that that's happening now because I think that this summer is a really important time for us all to like, to build a strong community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To like really, you know, AIDS is not over, but it's controllable, you know, and we can get married and in most places we can adopt kids and in not enough states, we're free of discrimination.
Yeah.
But it's like we can really build on now on what we lost, you know, starting from 1981. Now it's time to really like rebuild, you know, and be stronger than ever. And so I don't know. I feel like you fucking unleash some gay people on gun control. Forget it. I mean, forget it.
Right.
We're going to have some rules now.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm one of those people that I get when one of these things happens, I'm tweeting, I'm posting, I'm so mad.
Yeah.
And then I watch all the talk show hosts this week, you know, do their thing at the top of the show. Mm-hmm. And everyone then posting, how great was Fallon? How great was Conan? How great was Samantha Bee? And then I like said to myself, you know what? At the end of the day, that's pretty much equal to thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
Because I want these people. Jimmy Fallon has 41 million Twitter followers and Conan has 21 million. I want them to start using their high profile, you know, power to really make change.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine to hear them say, and you're like, yeah, that's how I feel too. But I wrote letters yesterday. First time ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every time I'm like, I'm going to do, and then finally I'm like, you know what? Now I got to do this.
Yeah.
I got to do it.
Yeah.
And it was easy. You Google who your senators are. It's a piece of cake. I sent three letters and I'm just, but everyone, like, could you imagine if 41 million Twitter followers all wrote a letter?
Right.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah. Made a phone call.
Yes.
To anything.
So I just, I mean, I always read about, you know, I'm just throwing names out like Angelina Jolie or George Clooney, and they go to third world countries and they start a fresh water campaign and they do all this stuff. And I'm not saying, why don't do that over there. Focus on this country. I'm saying, yeah, you do that. But then the people that aren't doing anything, how about you guys start doing some,
let's build something.
Yes.
Let's build something this summer.
we're
as
supposed
the Hold Steady
to,
tells us.
Right, there you go. Yes.
It's one of my favorite songs. So,
all right. Well, look, we got into some issues here. We usually don't do that, but it's, yeah. but it's related.
But how could you not? How could you not?
And I it's mean, related it's, to like, your life.
We should
life.
Be talking about this all of right. the time. All
and,
of the time.
And it's related to your life.
It is related to my
and
life.
And it's your book is about your life.
That could have been me in that bar, you know? I could have been any number of people I knew.
Exactly. And, without a doubt.
Yeah. And the thing that really got me, you know, like I said, it's easy to just kind of be like, well, here it goes. And then just kind of, you know, get to work and write a thing and go to the parade and whatever. The other day, I saw a video of like one of the kids, ran a roller coaster or whatever at the Harry Potter park in Orlando.
Yeah.
And so they had a vigil for him there and everyone raised their wands and like, I guess he was a Gryffindor or whatever. And it was just like, God damn it. Like that, that is that for whatever reason is the thing.
Well,
that just
I mean,
destroyed
like every
me.
One of those people had a story. There was no one in that bar where they're like, that guy was bad. No, so he had it coming anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no stories like that.
No.
They're having fun.
Yeah.
Dancing.
Yeah.
With
out
their
for
friends.
A sip and a twirl. And
with
it's
their
like,
friends.
And then somebody comes in with a assault rifle.
Yeah.
Or well, whatever it is.
My daughter and I went to see a movie last week, and the guy sitting next to us had a full backpack in his lap the whole time.
Boo.
And if you don't think that I watched him more than the movie,
of
you're
course.
Wrong.
Of course
like,
you did.
What the fuck is this guy doing?
Of course you did.
He didn't, and he didn't reach in it and pull snacks out and stuff.
Yeah.
He just had it there. And I'm like, how do you even get to bring that in?
Yeah. Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah.
What is going on?
Right. Because you know no one said, I got to look in that backpack. No way they did.
Of course not. Of course not.
All right.
Yeah, it's
that's
it's
our
nice.
Show. No, okay. The book is Party of One.
Yes,
and what I love about it, it's a memoir in 21 songs.
Yes,
each of your chapters starts with a song title.
Yes, that is correct.
Now you're checking your wand. Do you want to talk about that now?
No,
no, not
after.
Yet. After.
Yeah,
later.
Yeah,
okay,
later.
Cool.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, no problem. I had a member of the Go-Go's on here, Kathy Valentine.
Yeah.
And whenever I would play a Go-Go song, she would play Words with Friends.
Is that true?
Yeah. And I would say, well, how come, what do you, and I just say, I go, what are you doing? She goes, I'm playing Words with Friends. She goes, I go, but I'm playing. She goes, I don't even care. I don't even care about it. She goes, when
she's
you get,
heard it.
When you get to, she goes, when you get to my new music,
then
I'll listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Not fond of the Go-Go's.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I know her a little bit through Twitter.
She was
we've
great.
Had coffee a couple times. She's lovely.
She's great.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I loved her too. She
yeah.
showed up here like, and she, as soon as she got here, she goes, okay, I got to call my friend and tell her I'm okay. Because she didn't know where she was coming.
Uh-huh.
I give her an address.
Not.
I go, hey, I didn't go through people. I went directly through her. And she goes, yeah I'll do it.
Yeah.
So it was
awesome.
It was funny.
So she takes no guff, that one.
No. She could have kicked my ass and Kyle's.
Sure.
First chapter, Go Your Own Way.
Yes.
The Fleetwood Mac song?
Fleetwood Mac song,
let's just
yeah.
hear a little bit of it.
Sure, why not?
I don't know if we'll hear all 21 songs because we're talking so much, but
we are
we'll try.
There's so many Batman logos in my life right now. your shirt and your thing.
I know.
Yeah.
Iron Man's on this computer.
Oh, yeah?
How can
so
I ever change things that I feel?
This song never gets old.
Ever.
Never. No.
Baby, I'd give you my world. How can I, when you won't take it from me?
God, that whole, I mean,
I know.
I'm not saying anything new, but that whole album is, of course, spectacular.
I'm not a fan of Oh Daddy.
I'm okay with it.
That's the one, though, if I was going to fast forward one.
Yeah, okay.
I might skip that
but
one.
But in the context.
In the context, yeah. I love the album experience.
Yeah, me too.
That's how I listen to all my music.
Yeah.
I people know from listening to this show. Mm-hmm. I still have physical CDs, and in the morning I look through, I grab one, and that's what I listen to in the car, top to bottom.
Very nice.
For the whole day.
Very nice. What is it now?
Today,
yeah,
the Monkees' Headquarters.
Ah, that's a good one.
That's what I've been listening
to
all day
long. I like that one a lot.
Yeah,
I like that one a lot.
That's the third album, Kyle. That's the first one where they really all play on the album and write the songs, pretty much. All right, so Dave, Go Your Own Way. Tell us a little bit about without ruining the book for people.
Yeah.
We don't want you to we want people to read the book, but
right.
Go Your Own Way. Tell us a little bit of what's going on here.
That's very well. In the book, it's the sometimes the chapters are about the songs or the song plays a role, and sometimes it's just like the title kind of illuminates a theme.
Mm-hmm.
The first chapter, which is called Go Your Own Way, sort of sets the stage of me as like a young kid, 7 or 8 years old, in kind of a sportsy family, in very Catholic, very conservative St. Louis, yeah. and just no interest in any of the things that in I was supposed to like.
Yeah.
And but a very strong interest in pop culture and music and in movies and TV and whatnot. And also like the seed of the realization that I liked boys a lot.
What age would that have been for you?
I would have been first grade-ish, so whatever that is, 7.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. And I think that's a pretty common story.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
And,
okay, I'd say it's perfect. About the age. I didn't come out at age 7.
And I didn't
start dating until much later.
I raised Catholic, small town Pennsylvania, sports. I'm not into any of that. I like music and all that stuff. And the difference, probably the only difference between you and me, I like girls.
There you go.
It's the only difference.
There you go.
Couldn't get any, but I liked them.
Well, listen, I couldn't get boys either for a very long time.
No, because, well, you couldn't. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You couldn't have.
Yeah, no, it's true. In high school, what was I going to do?
Yeah.
What was I really going to do?
And that sucks.
Yeah, it does a little bit.
It's different now. It's really, I hope
it's different now.
It really, and you know, and with my daughter and all her friends, I really have, I'm really excited about the future because these kids are really, they're in tune with, you know, what do I want to say? With, Kyle, help me.
Like,
issues.
Like, issues,
they
yeah.
I mean, yeah. when I was 15, fucking give a shit.
Right.
I don't care what's going on.
Yeah. No.
She's watching the election stuff and they're into everything. And I'm like, this is great.
Is that today or is that Los Angeles? Like, is it the time or the place?
Well, now that you say that, maybe it's a little bit, the place maybe.
Could have something to do with it.
But maybe because of social media, everyone is more connected.
Sure. Sure.
So who knows?
I think that's true.
All right.
I think that's true. Okay.
All right. Well, that was quick on chapter one. That's okay though. Because that's exactly what you
want. I don't think we said the title of the book.
I did. I said party
one. Oh, okay.
You did.
Okay.
I made sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Party one. This is like a real book.
I would have corrected
this. This is he didn't self-publish this.
No, I know.
He didn't print these up in his basement.
Nope.
Did you print these up in the basement?
I did not print them up in the basement, no.
By the way, Dave has signed six copies. One will immediately go to the person who won the Rock Solid Autograph Club to benefit Smile Train. And then the other five, I'll figure out a trivia question. Maybe Dave will give me something and I will tweet that out and then we'll do this. We'll give these away. It's a beautiful book too.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah. I'm very happy with the cover.
The texture, the slip
jacket.
Doesn't
it feel good?
It really does.
It feels really good.
And you're going to read this, and this is no slight to the book. You're going to read this thing in a day if you want, because it's so much fun to read.
It's a beach read.
Get this on the, buy this at the airport and read this on the plane, people.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I haven't thought about the idea.
When you walk through the airport,
walking through an airport
and you see it, are you just going to stand by?
I don't know what I'm going to do. And that's the thing. I've been like, it's been a really busy year. And so now it's starting to like happen. And it's been very far off for a very long time. Now it's like any day now, right? And I just haven't thought about like the basic things, you know, like what I'm going to read at a reading or anything like that. I don't know.
What, how long did it take for you to write this book?
About a year.
About a year. And what was your process? How did you write every day?
Procrastinate and panic. Mm-hmm. And then like get a bunch of shit done right before or right after a deadline. I did something that I'm really happy about, which is, I got away twice. And, once was the month of January I spent in Chicago.
Okay.
Because I was like, I want to go somewhere where I don't really know anybody. I have like three friends from high school.
You spent the whole month there?
Spent the whole month there. I sublet a place.
No dog and no Ben.
No dog, no Ben.
Okay.
I came back once to do a show, but other than that, I was there for a whole month. And I wanted to be somewhere where I knew a couple of people. So like if I went bananas, I could go out. But but for the rest of the time, I wanted it to be too cold for me to do anything, but like sit and write. And so I did. And I got a lot of work done there. I also got a lot of like whiskey drinking done at like 3 in the afternoon, which is fine. It like in the winter.
Those are my favorite chapters, the whiskey chapters.
Oh, good.
I can tell. I can tell. Now that you say it, I can tell.
I slur my typing. And then when I was finishing up my second draft, it was August or September and I went to Palm Springs for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Where it was just like blazing hot and like you can't do anything again except like sit inside and just get it done.
My wife has written two screenwriting books that are right over there.
Oh,
and that's where she went to Palm Springs a couple of times to get some work done.
Yeah. It's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
It's a really good thing. And you just have to kind of change your surroundings, you know, and be around people you don't know and you get inspired. And also panic will inspire you as well.
And you did it because I'm holding it.
I did it. All right, I also had a really good editor who stayed on my case.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That yeah, that helps
he was
a lot.
Really smart.
Kyle, let's hear a little bit of the chapter two, Hungry Heart. I assume this is the Springsteen song.
It is. It is, yeah.
Got a wife and kids in Baltimore, Jack. I went out for a ride and I never went back. Like a river that don't know where it's flowing. I took a wrong turn and I just kept going.
That was my introduction to Springsteen. That
yeah.
was the first Springsteen album I bought, was The River.
Okay.
It's still one of my favorites.
Do you have older brothers?
Yes. Kyle's my nephew. So
oh, okay.
His dad is my older brother.
Uh-huh.
But my older brother listened to like...
He listens to like shitty, like Andy Williams.
Andy Williams.
Perry Como. Like,
no, Perry, he does not.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
No.
Because whatever
doesn't.
Music...
How old is he?
He's 6 years older than me, but you would think he was 80.
Yeah. yeah.
Because whatever, when he was, he was raised by my mom and the grandmothers. And so whatever they listened to, uh-huh. whatever my grandmothers were listening to, that's what he got into.
That's kind of sweet in a way.
yeah.
Like but, I kind of, I'm creeped out by it and I like it.
But like, but like if you played anything, it's weird. Like you play anything that was right in his wheelhouse for his age.
Yeah.
He'll be like, nah.
Oh, wow.
Zeppelin. Nah. You know, oh, it's just yeah. like, yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
That's real crazy. That's real crazy. Because this chapter is very much about my older brothers who really got me into music. All I wanted to do was be like them.
Uh-huh.
And
how many siblings do you have?
I have two older brothers who okay. are 8 and 10 years older.
Right.
So they were like in college at kind of the golden age yeah. of college music, with mm-hmm. the Clash and, you know,
yeah.
and the Specials and the English Beat and all this stuff. So they would come home with records that were just like amazing. And I would, whenever they would leave and they, you know, and they didn't know that I was grabbing them, but I would grab them and put them on my shitty Mickey Mouse, you know, turntable and
right.
listen to them and like learn every word
and ruin them
probably. Yeah. In some way that I was never
with
able
that
to
heavy,
figure out.
Bad, heavy needle.
Yeah. Bad, heavy needle probably. But I mean, listen, the reduction in sound quality is not a thing anyone would notice. It was just, you don't want your little brother grabbing
right,
your
right.
stuff. But yeah, I was, they both like revered Springsteen.
Okay.
Like I grew up in a house where, I mean, he was top of the heap.
The
I was born in New Jersey. So we lived in New Jersey until okay. I was like 5-ish. And I think that was,
and then where did
that
you
left
move,
a mark on
where
me.
Did you move after that?
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis is a good town.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It is. It's, you know, unless you're not white.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
So in this book, you talk, now this is where there's music all over this book. He talks about XTC and
uh-huh,
U2.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of this chapter, there's an interlude where you have Donna Summer, Eric Clapton, Dan Fogelberg.
I love that Dan Fogelberg.
Heart. I love Dan Fogelberg too. I'm in
a
kick right now. And the only person I know that loves him the way I really love him, well, you obviously now, but
yeah.
is Pardo.
Okay.
So like the other day.
Yeah, I would absolutely buy that.
The other day I texted Jimmy and go, have you ever heard this song from High Country Snows? I've never heard this song before.
Yeah.
And Jimmy's like, I have it on my phone. And then he texted me again. He goes, to be honest, I have 90 Dan Fogelberg songs on my phone.
Yeah.
And then he texted me again. He goes, to be honest, I have more Dan Fogelberg songs on my phone right now than any other artist.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's good.
I get it.
Never got to see him.
Hard
Rock
to say.
Rock in peace, Dan Fogelberg.
Mm.
Yeah, hard to say.
Rock in peace.
That's
Dan
what we
Fogelberg.
Say. We say when people are.
I
dead.
Like that.
Which brings me to chapter three, Rock in Peace Prince.
Oh,
let's go crazy.
The love of God.
And that was drugs.
Yeah, that's the most tragic
drugs.
Thing. That it's so like banal, you know? Like he was this like celestial creature
I know.
Of music.
He never seemed
and, like,
to change physically either. He always
yeah.
looked amazing. Like I would have thought he will be alive. Till he's 90.
Can I tell you something? April Richardson and Aaron Gibson had had like a party when David Bowie died. They
yeah.
didn't have a party when David Bowie died, but you know what I mean. Like
yeah,
they had
like
a
listen,
tribute
they had a big
sort
like
of
the DJ,
dance party.
Yeah.
Chip Pope
yep.
DJed. And I talked to Chip that night and I remember, because it was so incomprehensible that
yeah.
David Bowie would not be alive, right?
No, I thought again, I thought he would, I mean, he got cancer, but
right.
I thought he would outlast
even still.
All his contemporaries.
Yeah, it just, yeah, it all happened so fast.
Yeah.
And I remember saying this to Chip. I was like, so I guess someday Prince is going to die.
Oh, you did it.
I think I did it.
That's
I think
terrible.
I pardoed it.
Mm.
I mentioned him and now he's dead. But it's like that was the first time that I had ever thought about that. And the only person other than Bowie who was like that was Prince.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's nobody like everybody else, they're getting old and they're going to
die.
And
the output of music and this changing
yes.
of styles.
Yes.
And, I mean,
and just now having seen him at the Forum, I guess not just now, a couple of years
yeah.
ago, seeing him at the Forum when he did the residency.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, yeah, he was unbelievably youthful. and sharp, and the band was so tight, yeah. and he went on for like 4 hours.
Crazy.
Yeah, just absolutely insane. I think it's, I mean, maybe this is, I'm just being naive, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's because he wasn't a drugs guy that drugs got him in the end. You know what I mean? Like yeah. He wasn't Keith Richards,
no.
who will live to be 120.
I know.
You know what I mean? It was like he got, you know, the shit that you can get with a prescription is just so heavy and so brutal on your body. Yeah. And if you like try to kick it, your body kind of falls apart. And then, you know, you take the dose that you took before and your body can't handle it and whatever. I mean, it's just,
yeah, and then
like,
you need more and
yeah.
and the doctor gave it to you. So it's fine.
Of course. Right.
Elvis.
Yeah. yeah. Ugh.
I know.
Yeah, just absolutely awful. So there was another Prince dance party just weeks later. Yeah.
So, and tell me, Oof. So what's in the chapter of Let's Go Crazy?
Let's Go Crazy is about my experience in junior high, which I got into in like 1984, right around the, mm-hmm. the Purple Rain time. And there was a small, I went to an all boys school and there was like a small group of us. There was a huge bunch of us that, you know, would like go and throw balls and tackle each other.
You went to an all boys school?
I did.
That's like candy store.
What do you mean?
Because you're gay.
Yeah. Oh, but there's also the candy store that kind of comes into it.
Oh, okay.
Because there was a place called the candy store.
I was making a funny.
Oh, I know. But that actually relates to the thing. Because there was like a thing called the candy store.
Oh,
and
really?
It was like a little office and mm-hmm. there was like they would sell like snowballs and Twinkies
oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
and sodas and whatever.
Yeah.
And so like the five of us who didn't want to go and like play sports would go in there because like there was a boombox and we could put in cassettes and we could like talk about music and whatever. It was our mm-hmm. sort of little refuge.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, all of those boys, many of those boys end up being homosexuals mm-hmm. in later life also, but not all. And so that's what I thought you were referring to. But yes, an all boys Catholic school where everyone's in coat and tie. Yes. My type was set there.
Everyone
sure.
was dressed like Angus Young.
No, short.
No,
it was more of a Dead Poets Society yeah, yeah. kind of thing. Angus Young could not have less of a sexual impact
yes,
on me. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like you would think with the uniform, it would trigger something.
Is it the hat?
It could be the hat. It could be that he's, you know, that he's just like a hobbit, essentially. I don't know. I don't know. He just doesn't. Nobody in AC/DC. They just all seem like they're from Middle Earth.
When I was in college, I went to a Catholic college, and yeah, the first so my freshman year, it was all guys.
Yeah,
but we knew that sophomore year. It was their girls were going to come in.
Uh huh.
And then sophomore year was like 80% guys and 20% girls. And of the 20% of girls, there's like 3% that were cute.
Sure. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wasn't going to get one of them because there was 80% of
ratio was all
yeah,
off.
Yeah, yeah, much better looking guys than me. But my my great friend, he's still my great friend, Tim Gettler. Mm-hmm. He had a gorgeous girlfriend, like a model, and she went to like the sister school.
Yeah.
And Tim, in his room at college, he would put draperies up, and he would wear a purple robe, and he would give himself facials, and he would. I never thought anything about this.
Yeah.
Nothing about it.
Yeah.
Because he's got this dynamite looking girlfriend.
Sure.
He got her pregnant sophomore year,
uh-huh.
and he left school, and then they moved back to his hometown in small town Pennsylvania,
uh-huh.
and he went to another school, and they got married, and they had a kid, and then they had another kid, and then I move out here in 95, and he writes me a letter.
Yeah.
And the letter says, at that time I just started to date Pilar,
uh-huh.
and I let her read the letter, and I got big points on this, because he said, of all the people I know, I knew that you wouldn't judge me and you wouldn't care, but I wanted you to know
yeah.
that I'm gay.
Yeah.
And Chris and I are getting a divorce. Uh-huh. Everything's cool and everything's fine. And then he's been with his partner Scott for over 21 years.
Wow.
And yeah, but like the signs, like
Holy
if you said
cow.
Who's gay on this floor?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was Tim because he had the drapes and purple robe and no one else had
right.
tons so fashionable.
Yeah.
So clothing like every week,
yeah, he'd, but it was have, you know what again? Yeah. It was the 80s.
Like, I didn't think a thing
the
of it.
Rules did not apply.
No,
no, we just didn't. We didn't think. We didn't know about Boy George.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like we weren't sure whether Boy George was
right.
gay.
Yeah,
or George Michael. You
right.
know, and like Prince throughout his career. could get away with wearing anything that he wanted to and being, you know, as, I mean, like, look at his album covers. They're ridiculous. Across the board, ridiculous. But I mean, but he transcends. He transcends sexuality. We just weren't thinking in those terms.
No, we weren't.
Time. And at the time, and this, I'm probably skipping ahead, but I, at this all boys school, had a good friend who I had a massive crush on and just followed around awfully. And what today would be absolutely recognizable as like a young gay kid with a crush on his straight best friend. Mm-hmm. It was just like, at the time it was just kind of like, eh, well,
not a thing.
Dave sure likes him a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And it, yeah, it just, you know, so I guess I was able to sort of defer any thoughts about, you know, my sexual identity until later. I was like kind of able to punt. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's a sports reference. kids these days got to figure it out a little bit earlier or explore, which is kind of great too, I guess.
Let's hear a great song that I had actually forgotten about because I hadn't heard it for so long.
Yeah.
Chapter 4, this is Wham, The Edge of Heaven. Oh. I so forgot about this song.
It's a great song.
It is.
Yeah. I'm so glad you made this playlist.
Of course. I'm going to chain you up.
Come on. So great. So great. And like, and we had just gotten Wham and then they went away.
I know.
You know what I mean? It was like, you guys just got here. What do you mean?
And then George Michael really didn't continue to produce great pop music.
Well, I mean, there were two great albums.
Yes. And then, but I mean, he didn't have that longevity that you would have thought he would have had. I mean, Madonna still makes music. You would wish that George Michael would still be.
I think he still does.
It's just, we don't know anything.
We don't get
about
it. Yeah. I mean, he's huge in Europe, obviously. Yeah. And he doesn't need to.
No.
And you know what? He had some issues, you know, well, like he had to figure some shit out for himself, you know? Do some cruising in some parks. You know what I mean? Get busted for weed a million times.
I know.
Poor man. But yeah, I mean, that was a great summer for music, as I recall. I mean, it was the summer of 86.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, what something like that. Crowded House
86.
Came out in 86. Mm-hmm. No, Kate Bush, I guess, was 85. I was listening to some good shit at the time. Yeah, that was right in the middle of high school. That chapter takes place at like an artsy kids summer school that I went to. And disaster ensues, but I'm not going to get into
No, because we
got to read the book.
I can't
give you everything.
I've never heard this song before, and I love this song. This is chapter 5, Drifting and Falling by The Ocean Blue.
That's correct.
Play this song. I love this song.
It's a great song, right? You may
I had to buy quite a few of these songs.
Oh, I'm
like,
really?
And I had to look it up. I'm like, that's okay. Friends have all grown up
and gone. This whole album is fantastic. Go wrong. You can't go wrong with this whole record. Their first two records actually are just, oh, they're so good.
And the great thing and the sad thing is I can probably go to the UCD store and pick it up for $3.99.
Yeah, you probably could.
Which is great for me, but sad for music.
Yeah, I mean, you would have been able to 10 years ago anyway, right?
That's true.
Yeah. Oh God, they were fantastic. The chapter that we are that you're open to right now is from my disastrous college experience, which I express in like playlist form, because it's all just little sad, weird little vignettes. I had like kind of a choice, and I think a lot of people go through this, where it's like, it was clear to me what I was good at, what kind of person I was, where I needed to be, but I still felt like this urge to be good, to be like a good, what I thought a good kid was, you know, which meant to like go somewhere and turn into a conservative and like go work in a bank and like, you know, have a normal life like people do. And
that was your aspiration at that age. You just were just going to get a regular job.
Honestly, it was like 51-49 in favor of that. Like there was a huge part of me that was just like, I want to write. I want to act. I want to be on stage. I want to create, you know, but I didn't know how to do that. There was nobody in my life who knew how to do that.
Yeah.
I just had no guidance, and I had no wisdom in that direction either. Like I couldn't figure it out for myself, like how to make it work. What I did know how to do was sort of try to be normal. So I tried to be normal, and it didn't work out.
So you were probably a good student if that's what if you thought that was going to be the end game.
I was for a while, and then the wheels just came off. I Max Fishered it a little bit. I was on every club, and I was like, I was at every party and whatever. Yeah. But like I was not real good with the going to the classes.
Yeah. I was not a good student in college at all. Yeah. And I wasn't, I've never done drugs.
Yeah.
Never smoked pot.
Yeah.
I didn't even really drink that much in college. I just didn't like, the book learning.
Sure.
I just didn't like it.
It's not for everybody.
No.
And also, I mean.
And it was so easy to skip class in college. There's no one.
Nobody's going to check.
I remember getting up, showering, going to the cafeteria, having breakfast, going to the class, not going in, going back to my room. Like I did everything. I'm right there. I'm outside the door. I just go in the class.
Yeah.
And go back to my room.
Why bother?
I know. I didn't like it.
It wasn't for me either. And the thing is, I mean, now, and I think this is another thing that the next generation kind of has on us. Mm-hmm. We understand that there are different ways of learning. And there are also like 20 billion things that you can do in this world.
Yeah.
So like, if you want to kind of carve your own path, you sort of can a little bit. I didn't know.
None of us knew that.
Yeah.
Well, that's like Kyle came out here a couple years ago and he did an internship on the Conan O'Brien show, thanks to Jimmy Pardo.
Nice.
And when I was a kid, I didn't know that you could do, I could do an internship on Johnny Carson or something?
I had no idea.
I didn't know that even existed.
Yeah. A friend of mine from college did an MTV internship in the summer, like between junior and senior year. Yeah. And I was just like, I was like, wait a minute, hold on. That was available to me this whole time.
Yeah.
I could have just done that. I don't think it paid anything and I wouldn't have been able to do it. But
right. Well, Conan didn't pay anything for him, but I mean, it was a great experience, right, Kyle?
Of course. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. God, you must learn so much. Right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, I was not in the way of any of those things. Yeah. I only knew kind of one way to be an adult, and I went toward it, and it didn't work.
Nope.
Although after a while it did. Things turned out okay.
What about this Everybody Loves Me But You? What happened? What's happening here?
That's a story of my first boyfriend, my first like experience with love, which again, did not go well. If anything went well in my life, I would not have been able to write a book. So I'm really happy.
You need to write. Yeah.
Happy for all of the missteps and the wrong turns and whatever. I'm very happy for them because they give me rich source material.
Your brothers and your folks, they're all still with us?
Yes. Yes, they are.
They've all read this?
They have, my parents have.
Okay.
And there's, you know, a moderate amount of sex in it. Mm-hmm. Like my two drug experiences are in the book because I, you know, because they're again, disaster stories. Mm-hmm. And there's not like a ton of actual sex, but there are allusions to the fact that I have
stuff
had
that's
sex
going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And that they read it and they passed it back and forth and they laughed and they cried and they called me after every chapter and it was great.
I don't want to, if your kids are straight, you don't want to read
of
about them
not.
Having sex.
Of course
so
not.
That's not even,
just even the mild, the soft PG sex that's in the book is hardcore.
Hardcore to your parents.
For Catholic people in their 80s in St. Louis, who are my parents.
Yeah.
You know? So they read it and they were fine. And then like 2 days later, I got sad phone calls at different times of the day from both of them, just about like, what are the neighbors going to think and whatever. And I don't, you know, I mean, that is a real Catholic thing and a real Midwestern thing to prioritize other people's opinions of you. And I was able to kind of to break it down with both of them, which is really nice. And say that, you know, if somebody has a negative reaction to something that I said or did or whatever, that is for me. That's for me to handle. And I can handle it because there are plenty of people who don't like what I do and that's fine. Mm-hmm. It doesn't reflect on you. You can relax. I can handle it.
Yeah.
And I was able to sort of, and talk about, you know, the fact that we're grownups now and our relationship is different now and we're going to do things and we'll find out about things that the other one doesn't approve of. And that's fine. We don't have to support and we don't have to like approve of everything. We just have to love each other. Yeah. That's what family is. And it was great and candid and like, and cathartic and it felt really good.
I was going to say cathartic. That's my word, Dave.
Yeah. Nice. and then the next day, one of my brothers went to pick it up. And they were like, well, there's some sex in this book. And we talked to him and his editors made him put that in because that's what sells books. And we needed to hear him say that. And he said that. And then we believe him. like just totally invented this conversation that did not take place at all. And so that is how they have gotten through this experience, or to this point. It's not out yet.
Yeah.
The neighbors haven't read it yet. And P.S., the neighbors aren't going to read it.
Like, well,
I might get them to buy it, but I'm going to lose them in chapter one. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Or you'll have those neighbors that are looking for some dirt or something, so they might leave through.
Who cares?
As long as they buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all that matters.
Get this thing on the list.
Get this thing on the list, for God's sake.
Right? Wouldn't that be insane?
It would be nice. And then so that brother took it and went on vacation with it and left it there. So nobody else has read it. That was my last copy. So now I'll be able to send them some.
And I don't know these things. I don't know. You're normally, when a guest comes in here, the first thing I say before we even start recording, I ask them, is there anything you don't want to talk about?
Yeah.
But I just kind of felt that you would have said, no, there's nothing I don't want to talk about. Would that have been right?
I don't know. I guess it's a case by case kind of thing.
Am I asking you any questions that are?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Now,
I don't want to give the entire book away.
No, we're not going to do that.
Okay, good.
I want to ask you, are your parents and your brothers accepting of who you are?
Yes, they are. My parents do call Ben my roommate.
Of course. How old are your parents?
They're in their mid to late 80s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They are good. Both of my brothers are really, you know, they always, you know, Ben is always included in things, and, you know, we'll have gone on like weekend trips and whatever, and they always, you know, invite Ben along, and that's really great. And all the kids, like, I didn't really ever have like a conversation with any of my nieces or nephews. I think it's just kind of been like, you know, Steve has Betsy and Dan has Susie and Dave has Ben, you know, and that's kind of the way it is. Cause again, kids are different now.
We were, one day, walking to school. I was with my youngest. She's 11. And I was with my oldest, and we're walking to school. This was a couple years ago, so she wasn't 11. She might have been 8. And this car went by, and the boy pops out the window, and he yells to my oldest daughter, "Hey, Sarah!" And she goes, "Hey, Sam!" And then I said, "Oh, who's Sam?" And she goes, "Dad, Sam's gay."
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, okay." And then my youngest daughter says, "What's gay?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, you know how like a boy can like a girl?" And she said, "Yeah." I go, "Well, sometimes a girl will like a girl or a boy will like a boy." And she just went, "All right."
Yeah.
Simple as that.
The end.
Simple as that.
The end.
All that was, she was like, "I get it."
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. I was, my parents used to do a thing when one of the grandkids, one of my nieces or nephews, would be between eighth grade and freshman year, they would take them to New York for like a long weekend and see some shows and, you know, get them some city, you know?
Yeah.
And,
some culture.
Get them some culture. And, so when my oldest niece was 14, I took her out to lunch and I guess, Ben and I had just started seeing each other and like, she'd probably heard snippets and whatever and knew what was going on, but like, I hadn't like come out to her. And so she was like, "So I understand you're in a new relationship," like very sophisticated about it. And I was like, "Yeah, his name's Ben. You know I'm gay, right?" And she was like, "Uh-huh." And then I swear, she's 14 years old or 13 or whatever she was. She goes, "Several of my boyfriends have turned out to be gay." Like 13 years old, Catholic in St. Louis. Like it's a different place. And it could all have been, you know, who knows?
Yeah. She could have just been talking.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
It could be true.
Yeah. It could be true. Who knows?
I hope it's true though, because the kids coming out earlier is a good thing for the kids.
I think it is. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not, you don't sign a contract.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I really tried to be straight for a long time. Mm-hmm. I smooched a lot of girls. Didn't work out. You know what I mean? So like I figured my things out later in life. If it goes the other way, who cares? If somebody smooches a bunch of boys and then marries a woman, who cares? Who cares?
Exactly. It's a big who cares.
It's a big who cares. And it's a big who cares that's taking place now that I'm in my 40s. You know what I mean? Like now, like if it were happening when I was a teenager, it would be mind blowing.
Times are changing.
Times are changing.
Free Your Mind, Chapter 7. Let's hear a little bit of En Vogue. This song never gets old either.
Ever. Brother.
I just worked on this show called Greatest Hits, which is coming on ABC on June 30th. And Vogue is on it, and they sang Free Your Mind. I got to watch them rehearse and then tape the show. I must have seen them sing it 15, 16 times.
Yeah.
They were phenomenal.
Yeah. Is it all four of them?
There's three in the group right now, and two of them are original members.
Okay.
Two of the original four.
Gotcha.
But they hit it every time. It was a home run every single time.
I bet.
And they looked great and they sounded great. It was really great.
They had a really good moment. They too, they're like Wham. There was like two great albums and then really not much of anything else ever. Was there squabbling? Because I remember that one left.
Yeah.
The one I liked most left.
Yeah.
And then, and then it's like, now they're like the Four Tops or whatever. I could be getting that wrong. But like, they're one of those groups where it's like, you have no idea if any original members are still.
Right. You don't.
You know?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There were a couple bands that were on this show where, like Foreigner was on.
Sure.
And only the guitarist, Mick Jones, is an original member.
Yeah.
Every single other person is.
Yeah.
They didn't sing those songs.
Yeah. Toto's probably like that, right?
Toto. I'm a big Toto fan, so I can answer this for you right now.
Yeah.
Steve Lukather and Steve Beccaro and David Page, all original members. They're all still in the band.
Okay.
The drummer, Jeff, passed away.
Right.
The bass player, Mike Beccaro, he also passed away. And
Beccaro family having a terrible struggle.
I know. And that made me laugh. It's not even funny. It's mean, sad. It's mean. Yeah. And then, and their second vocalist is now the vocalist again.
Okay. Okay. I gotcha.
You didn't think you were going to have be schooled in some Toto.
Pat, I know who I'm talking to. I knew I was going to get schooled on Toto.
Which chapter do you come out in?
Kind of Free Your Mind. Kind of Everybody Loves Me But You. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are the big ones. Those are the big ones.
And when do you come out to your parents?
That is like kind of gloss over that one. Cause that's a disaster story. That's not funny. Actually it was fine. It worked out. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it just, you know, the events that transpired before it are much funnier and more interesting. So that's kind of what I focused on for that chapter. Yeah. A surprise visit from somebody, and we shouldn't say who, but like somebody makes a cameo appearance, and it's,
and we're not going to say.
Yeah.
When you wrote this book, was your goal to write a humorous book, a funny book?
Yes.
Because you are funny.
Thanks. Yeah. A lot of it isn't, but I do. I mean, there are jokes sprinkled throughout, but there are a lot of sad stories in it. You know, okay, good. Okay.
What do you refer to yourself as? Do you refer to yourself as a comedian, a host, an actor?
I don't know.
A journalist?
I don't know.
Because you do a lot of.
I do a lot of things. I do a lot of things. And it has become a kind of a game to me because I do a lot of those like talking heads shows kind of. And for the lower third, they always have to have your name and then like a brief thing of what you do. So it was a game for me to make it something different every time because I do like a million different things. So sometimes it's like comic and writer or,
comic's a good.
Comic, I guess, kind of gets at it. I don't know. But then it hit me a couple years ago, like, oh, that's a problem. Like you're supposed to be able to say in two or three words what it is that you do.
Yeah.
And I kind of can't. Like I'm busy all the time, but I'm like, I think it, for me to start stacking things on top of each other, I need to brand.
You should just have a big long hyphenate under those things.
I should have a big long hyphenate under those things. But the thing that's, you need to be able to like, people don't want to listen. It's gotta be like in two or three things. But yeah, I mean, right now I call myself a writer and comic.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a full-time stand-up comedian for 6 or 7 years, and I haven't done that for a very, very long time. But I still call myself a comedian because I think if you're funny, if you make other people laugh on a regular basis and you've gotten paid to do that, I think you can. I don't think you need, like, I think some people are hardcore. If stand-up comedian to call yourself a comedian, but I don't really feel that.
Who cares?
Maybe you're a humorist.
You know, I like humorist.
That's not bad.
And nobody else is really doing that.
No.
Like nobody else is claiming that. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'm a humorist.
I think we got
it. I'm a humorist who lives in Los Angeles, California. I'm a humorist, an editor.
Now let's talk. I might be jumping ahead, but again, I'm going to jump into chapter 12 and I don't want to, because I don't think we're blowing the book. And if anything, people who are listening to this, I think are going to say, I'm going to get that book.
Okay, good. I hope so.
So, chapter 12, play this Spice Girl song.
Oh yeah.
Wannabe.
Yeah. I didn't know that it started with a laugh.
Yeah. I think that's, which one is that?
It sounded ginger to me. Maybe scary.
I thought it was Mel B.
Huh. If you want my future, this is Mel B, right? No, this is Mel C.
Now, when the Spice Girls came out, it wasn't my thing, so I kind of just didn't even care.
Sure.
When I hear the song, it sounds amazing.
Oh, of course.
Sounds
all
great.
Of their shit was great.
Yeah.
Another group with two great albums who then fell by the wayside.
I just read something that they're planning something for next year.
Aren't they always? They're always planning something. The Spice Girls?
Yeah. So this is chapter 12.
Do you think 12? All five? Is it all five?
I think so, yeah.
Even Posh?
I think so.
Even Posh, who does not need the money.
No, not at all.
Well, none of them need the money, probably.
Posh needs a sandwich.
Yeah.
Too skinny.
Yeah. And she could smile once in a while. I know she's not happy with her smile.
Don't be, yeah, just...
But come on, love yourself.
Practice it.
Love that smile.
Chapter 12, Wannabe.
Practice that smile. Yes, Wannabe.
This chapter, because I remember you from MTV, because I was a diehard MTV guy.
Were
like the whole way through, even when Kevin Seal and who was the guy with the big hair that did the metal, but he wasn't really metal.
Ricky Rackman?
No, not Ricky Rackman. He had the big blonde hair.
Oh, Adam Curry.
Adam Curry. And yeah. But he didn't seem metal at all.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
He looked like, he was like the bass player in Heart is who he looked like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So they got rid of him for
Catherine,
Ricky Rackman.
There was a Catherine.
Carolyn Heldman.
Carolyn Heldman. I remember her.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and I was, yeah, I love MTV.
I loved Kevin Seal so much. And I still haven't met him. And I would still lose it if I met him.
He always felt like he had like a Bill Murray type of a sense of humor to me. And I really thought, oh, this guy's going to, we're going to hear from this guy
forever. Yeah. So likable.
Yeah.
So funny.
I know.
Yeah, just naturally funny. And I don't, you know, he's married to Lynn Sheldon.
I know that
Or Shelton. Who directed Hump Day and what else? She's directed a couple of big movies.
Okay, cool.
So
good for him. Did she ever put him in a movie?
Not in the ones that I have seen. No.
Come on, let Kevin Seal say a couple.
I mean,
lines.
I think if he wanted to, he'd probably finagle that. Maybe he just doesn't. Maybe he just shunned the spotlight.
Stay at home.
That's
dad.
What I like to think. Is stay he at just home like, dad, you know what? Yeah,
doing his thing.
They do. They have a kid or two.
It says a line. He's a stay at home dad.
Is it really?
Yeah. Really? Good for him. Well, go ahead, Kevin Seal.
That's what would be under my thing. Comic stay at home dad.
There you go. Humorist.
Humorist. I think you need a book to have a humorist, though, to say
do
humorist.
You?
I do. I kind of think you need to have a book, which you have now.
So Tuesday, good. You can start saying that.
Tuesday, okay. You can say it. Don't say
oh
it before.
Yeah, okay. All
right. So anyway.
Yes.
This, there's a contest.
Yes, there is, or was.
To be a VJ on MTV.
That is correct.
Are you sad when you turn MTV on and it's not the MTV that you and I both remember?
Of course I am. Of course I am. Especially in a year like this, when David Bowie dies, when Prince dies, you wanted to...
And when Tegan and Sarah have great music videos and songs.
Yes. I want to know which one my favorite one is in Fifth Harmony, but I don't know because there's not a place for them to show up to, you know? You want there to be like a place that you will go for music.
I know.
And now there are like a million places that you can go for music. And it's, you know, I mean, I guess the audience is being served, but not by one thing.
Right.
Not by one.
There's a million places to go, but none of them are as good as MTV was when we were younger.
But nothing could be. Nothing could be. It was revolutionary. And it could only last as long as it did.
As soon as the network started to do a little bit of everything, like it used to be like the History Channel, that's where you go for your history. And then when they put a sitcom on or something, whatever, I'm making stuff up. But you know, when they all started to branch out and do other things that weren't what they said they were is when I really got so angry.
But they're all doing, I mean, like MTV is doing really ratings-wise, you know?
Yep.
So it's like, and we fought with that when I was there, because we started to, the mission kind of changed and ratings were always important, but it became like, you know, we now know how to get like good ratings. So let's do that. So it was shows that have a beginning, a middle, and an end so that you wouldn't, you know, turn it on for 5 minutes, see a video you like, and then like, I'm sick of this one.
Right.
I'm going to change the channel or whatever. And like, and ratings really jump when you air half hour an hour shows, like they really there's a huge difference, and it's a bummer. So now they've gone back to that. Now they're saying that they're going to try to incorporate music more and have some like performance shows, and great. So it would be great. And it would be nice if they had on-air talent again. I think it's nice when it's great that there's like an Andy Cohen on Bravo. It's nice when like a network has a
that's
face,
a great example.
You know, like I think that's important.
Yeah, Martha Quinn was on the show. We went to Chrissy Stratton and I went up to her house in Malibu to record with her. She was the best.
Yeah, she's really nice.
I'll tell you because
she said she voted for me when I met her, and I will love her forever.
It was when the that VJ book came out a couple years ago. And when we recorded with her, I gave her a rock solid t-shirt. You will not be getting one tonight.
Oh, that's too bad.
But I didn't have the books with me for her to sign because the publisher hadn't sent them yet. And so she said, well, when they come in, just call me and then we'll meet somewhere and I'll sign them. And I said, great. So they came, I called her and we met in an Irwan. And I see her driving in her car and she parks and she gets out and as she's walking towards me to sign the books, she had the rock solid t-shirt on.
Nice.
I know.
Class act. That was that really Martha cool. Quinn.
I know.
That's really cool.
So
I can't believe that she went out with Stiv Bators.
I know.
That's so crazy to me.
Our clean cut Martha Quinn.
Yeah. I mean, I guess everybody goes through the bad boy phase,
I guess so.
Wow.
Her husband now is very attractive.
Really?
Yes.
I bet.
Very good looking.
Well done.
And she looks phenomenal.
She does. She really does.
She really looks like it's not like, she kind of looks like Martha Quinn. You go, no, that's Martha Quinn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for her.
So let's tell us a little bit about this this competition. So,
yeah, I found out about it. I was just checking the charts on Billboard.com, and it said there was a news story about how there was going to be an open call for VJs, and I was like,
What year is this?
This is 1998.
Okay.
And like I said, I was trying to be a normal person. Mm-hmm. I had an advertising job. I wasn't very good at it. I was trying to do the normal thing. It wasn't working out for me at all. And I was like, this is my chance. This is how I'm going to break out.
It was like American Idol is now.
It was, it was. I mean, and honestly, thank God it happened when it did and not after Survivor and American Idol and all these other shows, because it would have been like a 16 week process.
And they only did it this one time, correct?
No, they did it three. They did it for 3 years. Times? Yep.
I don't remember the other people that won.
And it was over the course of like 3 days.
Okay.
3 or 4 days. And so I went and I stood in line and I auditioned and I read a cue card.
What time do you get there?
Got there at like 4 in the morning, 4:20 in the morning.
Why do you get there so early, Dave?
I got there early because I know myself. And I know that like if I'm going to get in, it's going to be because of like personality, but not big personality. Yeah. I'm not going to be like a character and like dazzle you. Like I'm just going to be like a relatable sort of guy that you might like or whatever.
A guy that you'd watch and you'd go, he seems like one of my friends that I would talk about music with.
Exactly. Yeah. And in my mind, like everyone's going to get sick of seeing faces real early. So it was crucial that I'd be one of the first people they see, because like
that was smart.
A face like mine is just going to be a face in the crowd.
That was smart.
After like 10 in the morning, forget it. So I got there at 4 and things started at 9 and I was one of the first people. Okay. And so it worked out well. And
how did you think it went?
I thought it went great.
Okay.
But again, I was like, I had no idea what I was seeing, you know? And I got a couple of people's business cards and whatever. And they were like, well, we'll call you. And I just didn't know what to expect at all. Yeah. But because I had these business cards, I was like, maybe I can get in as a writer or a PA or something. Like maybe I can just start over. And
at that point you're just like, hey, it'd be great if this weren't, but yeah, I would just like to work for this company.
I would like to get your sandwiches for you in this building. I just want to be there and
be around it
and see if there's a place where I fit in here, you know,
maybe ride in the elevator with Stiv Bators and you'd be fine with that.
Oh, he was long gone by then.
Oh, sad. So sad. So, yeah. Rock and peace. Stiv Bators.
The Bators and the Porcaros.
And can I ask you this? Now they had a feud, right? Like the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Of course they did. Look where it got them.
Were
cold
you
in the, ground.
The good looking svelte Dave Holmes that I'm sitting across from?
Oh, nuts.
Back right now.
No, I was super fat. I wasn't super fat, but I was much heavier.
You're a husky.
I was a husky dude.
Yeah.
I was a husky dude.
And the hair was curlier and a little longer, I think, if I remember.
Was it?
I think.
I think at the beginning it was kind of short.
Okay.
But I tried every hairstyle under the sun because I had to see myself a lot. Like once I did get the job, spoiler alert, I end up getting the job.
What?
Yeah. In the long run. I had to look at myself on the television a bunch.
And that's horrific.
And it's
for anyone.
The most horrific.
Yeah.
And I had low self-esteem and I was much heavier and like, I didn't like my hair and I didn't like my clothes and whatever. So like, I would ask the hair people, like, just do something new. Every month, 2 months, just like try. I had like a blonde stripe. I straightened it. I did all manner of bad hair moves. Yeah, it was rough. Me and John Norris, I think both. I think we were neck and neck for most hairstyles.
John Norris, yeah.
He would switch it up.
John Norris was very skeletal.
Very skeletal. Still is.
What is he doing now? What's John Norris doing?
He just, like, they just got rid of all the MTV News people, mm-hmm. basically, like a year ago, maybe.
He was still at MTV?
So he's freelancing here and there.
He was still at MTV?
Yes, he was. He would show up at the, like, at the awards, and he would write stuff for the website and whatever. Yeah. He had, like, basically tenure, you know?
So how long...
Like Kurt Loder, but...
So how long of a process was this until they... Now, You didn't win.
No, I did not win.
But
no.
You did win.
You after were like, a while,
you were like Clay. You're like Clay Aiken in this whole thing.
In so many ways, I'm like Clay Aiken.
I wasn't even thinking about that. It's so funny.
I was thinking more along the lines of just all the terrible looks through the years. But I mean, in many ways, our lives have run parallel. So I didn't get it. But I went to the rap party and I got more business cards and I just I was like, I'm just going to keep calling until they have me in for a meeting or tell me to never call them again. And so I did, and I got myself a writing job. And then from that, I tested for a show and got picked up, and the show got picked up, and then it just sort of all happened. And I was there for a while.
And, one of the things I like in the book is the guy who won is Jesse Camp.
That's correct.
And you say that not one day of your life goes by where people don't ask you about Jesse Camp. And I would bet money that the first time I met you, I probably asked you about Jesse Camp.
I don't know because it doesn't faze me anymore. Right.
But Jesse Camp, how do we explain to people that don't know? He was kind of like...
Well, I mean...
He was kind of like a little Pauly Shore before there was a Pauly Shore.
Oh, it was after there was a Pauly Shore.
Oh, he was after.
Oh, yeah.
I got my timeline all fucked up tonight.
Yeah.
He was, I don't know how to explain it. He looked like a punk rock type kid.
He was kind of one of those glammy, like St. Mark's kids.
With ADD, it seemed like he had ADD.
Yeah, he was like a, you know, like the dirty kids who hang out in like where the rock clubs are.
Yeah.
But he was kind of glammy. The hair was sort of big. He was like bone skinny. Yeah. Like he would play
bass in D-Generation or something.
Something like that. Yeah. Exactly. Something like that. Like an East Village kid.
And what was his character like?
He was very...
I found it annoying, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I think a lot of people did. He had a strong fan base, and then everybody else was kind of annoyed.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is exactly the kind of person who wins that contest.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You give viewers like a chance to vote. That's what they do.
You give them the power, and they vote for Trump.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. he was just very, you know, he was very scattered. He was 18 years old. I don't know what he was on, but like he was just, you know, like a zillion bangles and like bracelets and whatever.
And it'd take an hour to put those on in the morning.
Yeah. just a real mess. But a lovely kid, a very nice guy, just kind of got caught in the crosshairs of fame, and he has not been the same since. He's been exactly the same since.
He got a record deal. He had an album.
He did get a record deal. Yeah, toward the end of that year, he got a record deal with Hollywood Records, and they paid him so much money.
He had a video in heavy rotation.
That album is not bad.
Yeah,
it's not bad at all. There are a couple great songs on that album. There really are.
And then how long was he on air talent? I mean, after his year, did he fade away or was he on for...
No, he got that deal and went off on what was supposed to be kind of a long tour.
And then never
And
came
that
back.
Was that was that. Yeah. And yep.
And then you become on air talent and you do all kinds of stuff.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they kept me really busy. What was really good about working there was that once you're in the door, once they trust you, then it's just like, all right, they'll just let you do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was always something to do. There were always live events and there was always, you know.
Were you at Live Aid?
Spring break. I was at, no, Live Aid was 85.
I don't know any of the timeline
What's
here.
Going on in your mind?
Were
right
you
now?
At the US Festival?
No, I wasn't.
Were you at Woodstock?
But I did do Live Earth.
That's what I'm thinking of.
The Bravo thing. And I did that with Duff. Who Duff, could not have been cooler?
Not She's Duff the McKagan not from Duff Guns N' Roses.
No, Karen Duffy.
Yes.
Model, actress,
Didn't she date
VJ.
George Clooney for a while?
No. Well, she might have dated him for a while. They're very close friends.
Okay.
She's in the place in Lake Como all the time. Okay. No, should I? No, I'm not going to. She told me a really funny
story.
She
was really cute.
She is, and she's
super
still
cute.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And she's married to like... some old money guy in New York who's awesome, and they have a kid, and she's doing great. Yeah, she's doing really
well. Did you ever do Farm Aid?
No.
Damn it.
No, never did. Never did Farm Aid.
Did you ever go to Coachella?
I did, ages ago.
Okay.
And I felt like I was too old for it then. This is probably like, it was the year of Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, whatever year that was, because I remember buying that on the way out. And Bjork was the headliner, and it was too many kids on drugs, and I couldn't handle it.
You did do some of the spring break things though, because
those were many spring break things.
The stuff in the book is really funny about.
Thank you, thank you.
Those must have been really fun, right, Dave?
No, not really. I mean, they were. They're fun, but like it's, you know, I got there when I was 26 or 27.
So you're 8 years past.
So I'm
when
much too old to be in Cancun for spring break. And it's like fun to be on air, and it's fun to be like the ringleader and to get kids like you know, screaming and shouting. But
you don't know it's not going to be fun. You think you're.
Oh, of course. I'm just like, we're all going to stay in the same place, and it's just going to be a party.
Yeah. I'm going to be working with all my friends.
It's going to be great.
Lit is going to be there.
but it's all of that is true, but it's, you know, it's also, you know, it's a show and it's work. And then it's like when you want to go and kick back and have a drink somewhere afterwards, you can't because it's Cancun, Mexico, and everyone there is 18 years old and they've been drinking sugary things all day and they're belligerent and awful. And you can't, like, everyone who works everywhere thinks you're a spring breaker, so they blow a whistle in your face and ring a bell and, you know, try to pour a beer down your throat and all that. And it's like, no, stop it. Don't touch me.
Can I read this one part in the book?
You can do whatever you like.
Okay. I'm going to start.
It's the last page.
No, it's
no, don't.
You'll find out who Dave murdered. There's a contest in the book.
Yeah.
And this girl, it says, as the song switched to Jay-Z's Can I Getta, this girl, she starts.
Let me just set the stage a little bit. Okay. It's 10 in the morning, 11 in the morning. Okay. We're at Fat Tuesdays. There is a DJ who is like setting the kids, like, it's, you know, hey, you from over there, and you, what's your name? Trish, whatever. Great, come over here. And like just grabbing two people and then having them be like, having them do like a dance contest.
Right.
Right. And as the couples progress, they get dirtier and dirtier because they're drunk, and it's the morning, and it's Wednesday.
And then this happens.
And then this awful thing happens. It says,
the girl pulling OC's board shorts down and putting his dick in her mouth.
Yeah.
And then you write, his dick, a stranger's dick in her mouth on a stage in Mexico in front of 200 hooting, slobbering, still drunk from last night college kids, two horrified adults, and DJ Timbo at 11:03 a.m. on a Wednesday. Couple number 3 won, and the prize was a daiquiri.
I think a daiquiri. Like, I don't even think two daiquiris. I don't even think one of them. I think a daiquiri and two straws. Yeah.
She already had his straw in her mouth.
Absolutely.
So it didn't matter.
Absolutely.
No. Yeah. So that doesn't air.
Oh, no. We weren't rolling. We were just like, I was with a location manager friend, and she was just like, you want to see the sights of Cancun? I got to look at places to do things. And it's like, sure. Yeah, fine. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's rough. It's real rough. It's real rough. That woman has her own reality show now. She's a millionaire. She's an Instagram star. That is the kind of thing that gets you really famous these days. She was ahead of her time.
That would get you famous now.
Yeah.
That was the equivalent of not wearing your panties when you would get out of a car. Oh, that was the thing for a while. I just started doing that last week, so I'm a little behind.
I mean, and like, did you ever think that you would come to be nostalgic for it? Because now that's kind of over.
Let's, I want to ask you a question, but first let's play the song. Let's just play Unpretty.
Oh, sure.
Because it goes, then that's chapter 15. TLC. Rock and Peace Left Eye. So many rock and pieces with this playlist.
Body count. To the mirror, who's inside there? The one with the long hair. Same old me again today. My outsides look cool. My insides are blue. Every time I think I'm through, it's because of you. I try different ways, but it's all the same. At the end of the day.
Then in this chapter at the end, you just have like a couple paragraphs about some people like Kid Rock, Tara Reid and her friend, Mark Wahlberg, Johnny Depp.
Yep. Yeah.
Puff Daddy and Dream, Lance
Bass.
Yeah,
it's like,
Dream.
You know what? I know, like, I didn't, I'm not here to write a tell-all.
No,
I'm
no.
just not. But I have some stories.
These are, yeah.
I have some stories, and these are the ones that got past the lawyers.
And this is just, this is one about, this just cracked me up the way this was written. This was about Tommy Lee.
Oh, boy.
And this is when he had his Methods of Mayhem album out,
yep.
which featured Fred Durst and Lil' Kim. Ugh. And you said that in the rocker style of the day, Tommy Lee was speaking at all times like a black character from a story written in a white supremacist creative writing workshop. A lot of crib, a lot of word, and a mega dose of yo.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was his thing. Like all kinds of crib and one love and all that shit.
And then you
like,
say just
on,
a girl
Tommy
comes
Lee.
Up and says that she would suck his dick like all night long.
Yeah.
And then that's when you realize, oh, people just say that to Tommy Lee all
that's
the time.
Tommy Lee's life. That's Tommy Lee's life. People ask me about Jesse Camp,
yeah.
people walk up to Tommy Lee and they're like, I'm going to suck your dick. That's just the way it goes. That's the way it goes.
So how long did you work at MTV?
I was there for about 4 years, 4.5 years.
And then did you leave on your own? Or did
I kind of did. Yeah. I mean, I found like, you know, your shelf life there tends to be about 4 years, 5 years, you know, unless you're in the news department. Like I said before, those guys go on forever, but, or did. But yeah, but like the people who are like doing all the on-air events and stuff, like
yeah.
generally you get a good 4 or 5 years
yeah.
And I knew people were coming in and I was like, I kind of found that I was like, my phone was ringing less and less, like the checks were coming cause
yeah.
we were under contract
yeah.
and whatever, but I was like, I was less and less busy and I started working on a show out here for them. And like little by little, I was spending more and more time out here and more of my belongings started to move west. and I was like, and I had like maybe 6 months left on my contract. And I was like, you know, I think I'm just going to keep working on this show out here.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to, I think I'm going to let that be that.
Okay.
And it was, you know, I certainly the call was going to come that that's what was going to happen anyway.
Right, right.
But I felt like it had to come from me. Like the idea of them doing it was like unthinkable to me. I couldn't bear it.
Right.
Even though it's not like you're fired.
Right.
It's just, you know, you have a
shelf life.
You have a shelf life, and it ends. And yeah. And so like it was important to me that I be the one to end it. You know what I mean? So I did, and then I just kind of ended up living here.
You know what job there's no shelf life for?
What?
A humorist.
That's true.
Do it.
Go on and on. Calvin Trillin.
The end of days.
Still at it.
Yep.
Still
that's
writing
you.
Racist
that's
poems.
You now.
Maybe.
You're not Calvin Trillin.
No,
but
I like him though. I mean, except for the Chinese food poem recently was not his best work, but I do like him.
Is LA, do you feel like LA is the place for Dave Holmes? Do you feel like this is home for you?
I don't know. I'm in New York a lot because I'm working at Esquire and they're there.
Yeah.
And so I get, I'm there every couple months for
okay.
a while. And I'm probably going to go do like some stretches there. Like I did in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I think I might go and like live there for a month just cause there's a lot to do.
Okay.
And that to me is kind of the ideal situation. I do love LA, mm-hmm. but I can't be here all the time because I notice myself getting soft and I don't like it. So like, I don't.
So you go to
New
York. To harden yourself up.
Yeah. I mean, I just go to kind of remember what it's like to have to work hard. You know what I mean? And have to deal with other people and inconveniences and weather and, mm-hmm. you know, and
yeah.
anger and public transportation and all the things that a person should have to deal with.
Right.
You know? So I think the situation I have now is kind of ideal. I think.
Let's hear Kyle play a little bit of a song called Any Little Town by the Push Stars.
Were you familiar with the song?
I was not.
No.
No.
Oh, they're the greatest. Mountains crumbling somewhere. Oh, this is early. This is like a demo.
And I've been sinking in your face.
Oh, wow.
Been thinking that this race is over.
This is like a demo.
Oh, you see, every time you smile,
this is from an album called Emergency and I.
No, that's the, Dismemberment Plan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have the wrong thing highlighted.
Yeah.
This is from an album called Tonight.
Yeah, this is like an early. This is like an okay. indie version.
It's
of
cool
song.
Though.
It is. It's a good song. But then they went. They got signed to Atlantic or mm-hmm. something. You should download the one from what's the name of the album?
I'll find
it. Back to the Party.
Okay,
I think it's called. But they're fantastic.
After the Chris, Party.
After the Party.
After
yes.
the Party. After the Party of One.
After the, there it is. Chris Trapper of the Push Stars is now a solo artist. Mm-hmm. He plays, he will come through town and play Genghis Cohen a bunch. You would love him.
Oh, cool.
He's fantastic.
I know Genghis
if you like
Cohen.
Dan Fogelberg,
oh,
forget it. You would
God.
Love him.
Now, we started the show off, well, we talked about the tragedy in Orlando.
Yeah.
You were in New York during 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah. I flew in like an hour before.
Like that was really like when I was reading the book, I was like, I didn't, I mean, that's not something you just talk about.
Right. Right.
But, But you also slept through 9/11.
I did, yeah.
Which might be the best way to get through 9/11.
I think so, yeah. As I say in the book, I think I'm the last, like aside from babies and the very old, I think I'm the last person in Manhattan to have found out about it because I got home. I was supposed to start rehearsals for a show the next day that I found out I got the day before and I was super excited and I
Rocky,
got on a red
Rocky
eye.
Horror
it was a Rocky
show.
Horror show on Broadway, yeah. And I took the red eye and I got into Newark at like 7 or 7:30 or something.
Yeah.
And I got home and I said goodbye. Like my roommates were passing me and going off to work. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to get some shut eye. And like, cause I was supposed to start, you know, working. And I slept and I just like, I heard some noise, but I was like, that doesn't concern me. And
that would have been buildings coming down, Dave.
No. I didn't hear that noise, but I just heard like, you know, the chatter of like people in my apartment and whatever. And I was like, okay,
you were just like, shut up.
Just
people.
Be quiet. Be
Damn
quiet.
It.
Yeah. I got to sleep. So yeah, I woke up at like maybe 1:30 and
crazy.
Everything had happened. So it was like The Walking Dead, you know, like where he gets shot and then it's like, he wakes up and it's a completely different world.
So people that were, some people that were living in the apartment you were in actually could look out your window and see.
We had a roof deck and like from our apartment we couldn't see it, but there was a roof deck that had like this view that was beautiful and it was just like just a dome of just dust and smoke.
That
and
must have been horrifying.
I mean, again,
see.
it was similar to what I'm talking about with Orlando, where it was like it was so horrible that we kind of nobody could process it at the time. Like, I mean, it was obviously horrible.
Watching it on TV out here, it was you're watching it on TV, so it was like watching an action movie or something because you're watching it, but it doesn't immediately you connect it. Well,
yeah.
There's people in that building and there's how many people are in there? You're just kind of watching these events happen.
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
But being right there, I mean, after you woke up and realized
and to be
what was going
you,
on.
It took me longer than I'm comfortable admitting to realize that they didn't like when I heard that they fell down. Mm-hmm. So I picture them falling down.
Sure.
Just like a tree falls down.
Yeah.
So I was like,
we're not architects, Dave.
Yeah. But actually, like one of my high school friends who's in the book is an architect and explained the whole thing to me because they're built in such a way that they collapse in on themselves.
Okay.
And I'm not going to get into whether jet fuel can melt steel or whatever. Like we're not going to have a 9/11 truther moment.
We're not going to have a rock solid exclusive.
No, we're not.
Right.
We're not. But I just assumed like when I first heard, I just thought like how many tens of thousands of people must have died if that is the case. But I mean, It was plenty bad the way that it happened.
Yeah.
But I just, to have seen it and heard about it all at the exact same time was a little jarring.
Did you know anyone that passed in 9/11?
I do. Yeah. A couple friends from college and the boyfriend of a friend of mine from my improv team.
God.
And they were engaged, but they were sort of being cool about it. And they had a kid and whatever. And he passed and she, you know,
that's awful.
That, I mean, she's like officially not a 9/11 widow. So there are a whole bunch of benefits that she can't get and whatever. But yeah. I didn't even find out about that until a couple months later, you know, cause like we had sort of lost touch a little bit and then the word reached me, I guess it was a couple of weeks later or whatever.
What went on in the aftermath when you were right there? Did you go out and venture out and
we did,
walk
yeah,
around?
Yeah. My roommates and friends just kind of roamed the city. We did a lot of drinking. A lot of people did. It was like, it was a really boozy time. It was
boozy,
sexy
Were you afraid to walk around
time.
There? Were you afraid
no,
to?
No, it wasn't at all.
You
no,
didn't think?
Nobody, okay. No, I didn't. I kind of didn't feel like everything felt so much on lockdown that I didn't feel like we were ever, like I wasn't worried that I was going to get shot or that there was going to be a bomb anywhere or whatever. For sure, like if somebody dropped something, everybody like jumped out of their skin, you know, because we were just tense. We're like highly strung.
Yeah.
We basically just like, we roamed the city and just kind of took it all in. It's all in the book.
It's in the book. Am I having you tell too much?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. There's another cameo appearance from another famous person who we're not going to say.
Now you flew there to start rehearsals on the show. When does that happen? I mean, when a 9/11 happens,
then it's we'll get back to this show at some point.
Were you the guy calling like every day? Hey, I flew out here for this.
Yeah.
When am I going to come down?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was ready to do it, but also like, you know, your priorities.
So how long, seriously,
themselves.
How long was it?
I think
it
came back in like November and I did it sometime around November, December, something like that, or early in the next year. But yeah, I did end up doing it. It was great. Met Sebastian Bach. played Riff Raff.
You met my friend Kristen Kelly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Who were you in the show?
I was the criminologist. I was the guy who tells you how to do the time warp. They were sort of like stunt casting it with all like New York media types. Mm-hmm. So it was like Penn and Teller and Cindy Adams and somebody from New York One and then me and then, you know, Sally Jesse Raphael or whatever. It was real weird, but awesome. I think Robin Leach did it for a week. Yeah. I was in good company, man. That was real good company.
We're going to jump to chapter 20, Kyle, if you could hit us with a little bit of a song called Losing My Edge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm losing my edge. I'm losing my edge. The kids are coming up from behind. I'm losing my edge.
Now, in this chapter, this is when you find out that you're not that you're not staying in touch with music and maybe things that you would like to stay in touch with.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're with someone
yeah.
and they go crazy because the Strokes mm-hmm. walk by. The mm-hmm. whole band.
Literally the entire band.
And you're like, I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I lost touch. And I never imagined it would happen. Yeah. It was my superpower. Mm-hmm. And it started to fade. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's really terrifying.
See, that's where having kids comes into
yeah.
at least a little bit keeping you sure, up to date with sure. some things.
Do they make you listen to Top 40?
No, my 16-year-old, it's all about Spotify and she'll,
sure.
you know, they'll recommend, like if she's listening to, I'll say Tegan and Sarah just because we were talking, uh-huh. then they'll recommend things to her. So she's always listening to stuff that I've never heard before.
Sure. Sure.
And, you know, when I drive her to school, you know, I'll let her play her music in the car and it's right. really, it's kind of refreshing. I mean,
that's
I don't,
nice.
Like what's a, Say Hi? Do you know that band?
No.
Yeah, I bet I can name a Mal Blum.
Nope.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean.
I feel like you're making these up.
I'm not. Okay. I know, because I always tell her, I go, oh, we can listen to the new album by Mal Blum?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
she goes, that's so old, because yeah. I do it every day.
Of course you do.
But yeah, it's all these bands.
Yeah, it's impossible for me to keep up. I will tell you, I'm so delighted that I love the new Tegan and Sarah as much as I do.
Top to bottom.
Because it's like, it feels very current and yet I love it. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, this is the second time I'm mentioning it, though. Fifth Harmony. I know they get played all over Top 40 radio, which I haven't listened to in a decade yeah. and haven't missed. Mm-hmm. But like, it is such a perfect pop album. I can't stop listening to it.
They were also on the Greatest Hits show.
Really? Just worked on what now. Is the show? What can you tell me?
I can tell you everything. It comes out June 30th on, uh-huh. on ABC.
Uh-huh.
It's a summer series.
Yep.
And they take new artists and classic artists and they put them together and they sing the classic artists song, like Andra Day sang with Bonnie Raitt.
Great.
And what's his name? Who's the guy from Fun? Nate Roos.
Mm-hmm.
He sang I Wanna Know What Love Is with Foreigner. I mean, and everyone is singing live.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's great.
It was really cool.
That's awesome. What did Fifth Harmony do?
I forget what, like, you know what? I think they sang a medley of Destiny's Child songs.
Okay.
That's what they did. Because sometimes if we couldn't get the artist, then we
sure.
pay tribute to. And every gotcha. Episode is like, one episode will be 80 to 85, one uh-huh. will be 85 to 90. It's
oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's great.
Yeah, lots of fun.
Oh, I'm
and
in.
Great performances.
Who's hosting? Why isn't it?
Arsenio Hall.
Get the fuck out of here.
And a new country artist named Kelsey Ballerini.
Uh-huh, sure.
Do you know her?
I do.
And Arsenio is 60 and she's 22.
Okay, great.
So I gave them a joke one day for her to say, you know, between us, we have 82 years of experience.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he asked how old she is. She goes, yeah. I'm 22.
Yeah.
So between us. And he was like, okay. But Ray Parker Jr. sings Ghostbusters.
Oh,
he pulls up
wow.
in the Ghostbuster car and he gets out. It's phenomenal.
Wow.
Kenny Loggins.
Now, is that a greatest hit?
That is a greatest hit.
Wow.
Right?
I mean.
I mean, it was number one.
It's a hit.
I think it was number one for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that's true.
Well, I think because
that got him on Give Me a Break.
And the Ghostbusters movie's coming out.
Yeah, okay, okay. So. I get it. I get the tie-in.
Now, okay.
Oh, but I what I credit for like saving my life and keeping me current and keeping me from like despairing and you know, listening to, you know, and just going back to the 80s and staying there mm-hmm. is the Hold Steady, like who I just absolutely love. And they're like, our age, you know, they're like grown-ups who make music that is fresh and interesting and like vital and like and so full of all of the things that I love.
Yeah.
Like they incorporate all the things that I am and that I love, and they brought me back into the fold, and it made me very happy. And what makes me
happier?
But
none of the chapters are from Hold Steady Songs.
No, they're not. No, because I kind of went and tried to go chronologically.
Yeah. No, I get it.
But Craig Finn of the Hold Steady is going to be hosting my event on the night the book comes out in Brooklyn at Book Court on June 28th.
Yeah. Yes, Murray.
Hand in the air. I don't know. I don't know.
My favorite band's Cheap Trick.
So okay.
That's why he's bringing that in.
Okay. That sounds right. Yeah.
So let's do some quick promoting.
Let's do it.
First, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Dave Holmes.
Do you have a website?
I do not. Well, I mean, there's one for the book, DaveHolmesParty.com.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And the book comes out. Kyle, tell us when the book comes out, Kyle.
June 28th.
2016.
You're listening today. It's Thursday. Buy this book on Tuesday. Pre-order it right now.
If you're in Brooklyn on the 28th, I will be doing an event at Book Court. On the 29th, I'll be at Kramer Books in Washington, D.C. With Linda Holmes of NPR, who is no relation. I'll be in St. Louis on July 11th at Grand Center and at Book Soup in L.A. on July 13th.
Great. This is fantastic. How excited are you?
I'm very excited.
Now, we always play a playout song, Dave, and normally I would have just played the last song that's on your playlist.
Sure.
But today, because we talked about it at the beginning, today Kyle informed me that Melissa Etheridge just released a song called Pulse.
Really?
With all the proceeds for this song are going to go to the victims of the Orlando shooting.
Wow, that's great.
So at the time of this record, it's not available for purchase, but they said it will be available for purchase. So maybe by the time you're listening to it,
you'll be able to purchase. So please do purchase it, because you get a song and money goes to a good cause.
Yeah.
And she's written songs like this before. She wrote Scarecrow about Matthew Shepard.
Yeah.
Am I saying his name right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tuesday Morning about Mark Bingham. And so as soon as Kyle told me this, since Melissa's been a guest on the show, I reached out to her people and I asked if we could play the song in its entirety to close out
the show.
And
she said yes.
They said yes. Good. So thank you to Team Melissa, Steve Germant and Adam Loewenberg and Katie Monk and Melissa Etheridge. Thank you for being here, Dave.
Certainly. Thank you for having me.
This was great fun. I really loved
this.
This is a great show.
Thanks.
We're a rock solid show. I'm at Pat_Francis and Kyle's at Kyle Dotson Funny. And this in its entirety is Melissa Etheridge's Pulse.
Everybody's got a pain inside. Imaginary wounds they fight to hide. How can I hate them? When everybody's got a pulse. I dream in a world that wants my soul. It tells me if I hate, I can control. But I don't believe it. I cannot conceive it. 'Cause everybody's got a pulse. I am human. I am love. And my heart beats with my blood. Love will always win underneath the skin. Everybody's got a pulse. Once again I hang my head to cry. I can't find a reason why they died. We will find the answer blowing in the wind. That everybody's got a pulse. I am human, I am love. And my heart beats with my blood. Love will always win underneath the skin. Everybody's got a pulse. Who you gonna hate now when there's no one left but you?
catapults. I am human, I am love, and my heart beats in my blood. Love will always win, underneath the skin, everybody's got a pulse.
Everybody's got a pulse.
I am human, I am love, and my heart beats in my blood. Love will always win, underneath the skin, everybody's got a pulse. Everybody's got a pulse. Everybody's got a pulse.